Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
And how are we this fine summer's day?
I know.
Well, it feels like summer.
It does feel like summer.
Yeah. It's warm.
It's very warm. It's 25 yesterday.
Wow, yeah. That's craziness.
I know.
And it's dry.
I just hope it's not 42 in August.
Well, it doesn't look promising for this year.
No.
I think that we're good for a dry spell.
Mm-hmm. So careful out there.
I know.
Yeah.
There's already fires burning. Yeah. I can smell it.
Mm-hmm. Can you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a big one.
There's like a dozen.
Already?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not even the middle of May.
No. And, you know, that's one thing that we can't decide. We don't have any control over.
We don't have a decision-making process for the weather.
Nope.
That's for darn sure. But we do have lots of things that we make decisions about.
Yes, and that's today's topic.
Yes. And how about those NDP?
Oh, wow. How about them? Now, so we're going to talk about the art of decision-making. Because it is a science, but it's also an art.
It is.
Yeah.
And we were inspired by the election.
Yes, we were.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sure lots of other people because are inspired by the results of the Alberta election.
A lot of people made a decision.
Yes.
And a careful voting. And considered one. That's probably one of the biggest decisions you can make.
Exactly.
Is how you vote.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Voting is very powerful. Mm-hmm. As much as you think it doesn't make a difference, it does make
it
a difference.
It does make
Look
a difference.
At the difference it made.
Well, it certainly did in Alberta.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so funny. Thursday morning, there's a snowstorm, or Wednesday morning, there's a snowstorm in Edmonton.
Oh, yeah.
And the newspaper headline was, when HE double hockey stick freezes over, but it was actually like...
It was frozen.
Yeah, it was frozen over. But, and then, you know, I see that as a joke, but a lot of people have maybe not responded to this decision as well as one would have hoped.
No, in fact, I've heard a lot of negative feedback about people.
Yeah.
People who were living in Alberta once, who live in Salmon Arm now, say that it's alarming, it's terrible, it's awful, it's the end of the economic everything. It's like end of the world. We're talking end times here.
It frustrates me.
So why are people believing that?
I mean,
that's...
Yeah. Why? Indeed. I don't know. There was an article in the New York Times, about the election, talking about how within hours of declaring the majority, there were pictures of swine flying.
Yeah, I saw a few of those.
Flying swine. I thought that's hilarious. But, and his argument was it won't be nearly as bad as everybody makes it out to be.
Well, no, and here's the thing. So both Calgary and Edmonton.
Yeah, Iverson in Edmonton, I think, and Nancy in Calgary.
Yeah.
Very progressive leaders.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And very socially responsible and thoughtful, balanced leadership happening there. So, of course, doesn't it go to reason that the people would see that that's working very well for them and they are prosperous, and so why not take that to the next level,
right,
to the provincial level?
I just think it was a win for moderation, generally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Win for balance.
Yes. I'm not hard right, but I'm not hard left.
Yeah.
Right? So in the middle, and I doubt, most of us are middle.
Yeah.
Of the road,
we're
right?
Very central.
And so, I mean, I was especially, there's some government or political think tanks online, the Manning Institute in Calgary, especially harsh on the value, you know, on dismissing the value of a populist's decision.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be supportive and congratulatory and go for it. Good luck. Let us know what you need. We're here to help.
If it went the other way, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like,
we're awesome.
Yeah.
That's what they'd be doing.
Yeah. So majority with 40% of the vote. I mean, hello, Mr. Harper had the exact same experience.
Oh, yeah. This is it. It's the Manning Center for Building Democracy.
Oh, for Pete's.
And they're slamming the vote. It's like, oh, dudes, check your mission statement in your binder.
Yeah. Go back to the binder.
Yeah.
And I wish that, Peter McKay, I think, the justice minister, made some really awful comments.
Oh, Mr. McKay.
Yeah, and I really wish that they would sort of reflect upon their own win to sort of see the ratio is exactly the same. And if they think that there needs to be election reform now to fix
now
this
would be the time.
First past the post system, this is it.
Yeah, and so you're referring to the Alberta Stan comment.
Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate.
That is. It's offensive.
And I just don't understand why they would ridicule the people they're courting, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's they're all just about Alberta, Alberta, Alberta. And then Alberta does something and they say, oh, Alberta. Silly Alberta.
Yeah, and then they're just basically saying, you guys got steamrolled? What do you mean, you guys? You guys are the people who voted for change, for something that's more balanced.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's why we got excited about the topic today.
Yes.
The decision-making process.
But it's true that we don't, so often we jump, well, for one thing, we're not always very good decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, especially with social media, as you pointed out before the show, we're getting worse and worse, or more and more critical of other people's decisions.
Mm-hmm. It's really easy to do.
We're sharing too many decisions on social media.
Oh, like, yeah.
Look and at we're my influencing. Muffin. I had a muffin for breakfast, or here's my lunch, or, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're
here's what I
influence.
Made for dinner. That kind of drives me crazy.
The twittering on the toilet thing?
No, yeah. I never do that. No, but people who post pictures
of
their
post
dinner.
Everything. Yeah. Oh, I see. Like the food.
I mean, I've done it too. Look, I made pizza. I mean, it's ridiculous. Who needs to know that? Right?
What if it was really good pizza?
Well, it's almost like we're obsessing about decisions that don't matter, and we kind of suck at the ones.
And ignore the big ones.
The big ones. Like, should I use my credit card? No, is the answer you're looking for. Right?
That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're just having lots of fun making the small decisions and influencing our friends on their decisions, mm-hmm. which is also problematic.
Oh, yeah, because we're all experts now.
Well, let's
talk. Because we have the internet.
Yeah. Because everything on the internet is truth.
Oh, it's so true.
So let's talk a little bit about how social media has changed our decision making.
Yes.
And especially because this is your field, marketing is your thing, how things have changed, mm-hmm. because advertising used to be the thing that influenced our decisions consumers.
And you had control, you would code the message and you had control.
Yeah.
And then you would buy the space in the vehicle that would send the message out, the newspaper, right? The magazine, the airtime on the radio, you know.
And so as a consumer, you decided if there's a need to be met, mm-hmm. and then you would seek out information to meet the need.
So you might buy the paper and look in the classified ads.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's where the advertisers would cleverly place their information, because mm-hmm. this is your research. This was the way you felt you were educating yourself about the product you were after, the thing to fill your gap.
Yes.
So that was it.
But you had to do your own needs analysis.
Yes.
Like, I identify a need, but there is no milk in the fridge.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
It's true.
So then once we've done that and we've information gathered, which also includes our past history, our past experience, mm-hmm. and information from friends and neighbors, mm-hmm. you would make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision would be like, I choose brand X.
Yes.
And then you go on to buy brand X. And then after the decision is the post-decision evaluation.
Yes. Brand X was not what I thought it would be.
Yeah. Didn't work out for me. But or brand I wish X, I'd got the red one.
Yeah,
or
now post-decision marketing or relationships are very important. That's why every time you do something at the bank, they phone you. How was your experience?
Yeah.
Do you notice that?
Yeah.
It's annoying. But
it is.
They really, it's important for them to collect that information.
Okay. And so now let's go to how the same process works on social media.
Yes.
Because that's the kind of the mm-hmm. kicker is this post decision. So the first part, the needs recognition,
mm-hmm.
it used to be that we would actually go, I need a new dress for mm-hmm. the party on such and such a day. Now social media tells us what we need.
Yes. And it knows what you need, and it does that using algorithms based on your search patterns.
Yeah. Which is creepy because, you just search for a canopy tent and then for the next 10 weeks on Facebook, all the advertisements that are on your side page are canopy tents on sale.
I know. God. It is creepy.
It is. So anyway, so the needs assessment has been hijacked by the algorithms
hyperized by social media.
And your friends, posting pictures of this and that. You're like, oh, this was so great. And I love my new bike and I love my new this. And so all of a sudden you think, I need that.
Mexico was awesome.
Yeah. I think I need that. Mm-hmm. Right. So your mm-hmm. needs assessment starts to get skewed because
you're overstimulated in a way.
Yeah. So it's all the keeping up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. but it's not just your neighbor that you're trying to keep up with. There's like a global environment here of people telling you
it
what they've got.
Your immediate family, extended family. I mean, university friends, high school friends, they're all there, man.
Yeah. Telling you what you need.
Yes.
Okay. So our needs assessment is messed up, mm-hmm. but we often are finding we have more needs now than we used to, mm-hmm. real or not.
Well, we confuse needs and wants.
Yes.
I think we're confusing.
Oh, for sure.
Needs and wants.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And but that's part of decision making is you have to get the right assumptions. You have to challenge every assumption. Yeah. Do I really need this? Nah, probably not.
I know, but you see, that's the other thing that's really changing with us is our need, our ability to determine what's a need and what's a want is not clear anymore. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's the need of the devices, right? The electronics. Mm-hmm. We say, well, I would rather really not, but I need it because the upgrade gives me this and it coordinates with my work thing.
Yeah,
and
well, that's built-in obsolescence. That's also part of
which
marketing.
Makes people think they need it. Mm-hmm. It's not just a want, a need. So, I mean, I just think we're getting all messed up in the needs assessment anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so after we've recognized our need.
It's hard. That's the first thing in a decision. You have to go, oh, I have a need.
Right, right. Yes. And then the information gathering, which used to be as simple as opening up a newspaper, coming across the ad, oh, hey, blenders are on sale.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to the bay, get my blender, and we're done.
We're done.
But no.
No, no.
Not anymore.
No.
Now you Google it. Mm-hmm. What is the best blender to buy? Oh, my gosh. Then you get the flood.
Then you YouTube it.
Yeah.
Right?
And then you get, will it blend videos?
Will it blend?
Oh, I just heard that on the Vitamix there. Everybody needs a Vitamix now. But anyway, so then you got, okay, so you got all the internet reviews that people have done. You've got your friends saying, oh, I just bought a such and such 6 months ago. I love it. And somebody else like, no, mine doesn't work. So don't get it from so-and-so or else maybe get this other one that costs $200 more because it, you know, it does this.
It's got
this
blend gadget. Screws and bolts
and iPods and stuff. Yeah. So you got your information gathering has gotten out of control.
Yes.
And you don't know who to trust. If you're going to go online and look for reviews, you don't know which reviews are planted there, which reviews are
genuine.
You don't
even know if they're real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then after that, you actually make a decision and then you actually buy something.
Yes.
And we'll skip all of the details of how we buy now because that's a whole other mess. But then the post-purchase evaluation, this is where it gets all crazy. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. Now marketers are thinking really hard about this because people communicate a lot after they've purchased something.
Yes.
After their decision. Mm-hmm. Reviews. Online comments, blogs, continual, like it just look at me in my new dress. What if nobody selfies. Clicks on like if you post in your new dress, right? That's a post purchase evaluation.
Yes.
Okay, now my dress sucks because nobody liked it on Facebook. Right? Like all of these evaluation tools are out there.
We're hyper evaluating and yet we're not doing a good job of making decisions. Or are we? Maybe we're doing an awesome job.
But this is the thing this is a great little micro study to kind of talk about how we make decisions now because of the way social media has changed our consumer decisions. How does the internet and our technology in general change the way we make big life decisions and organizational decisions?
Yes.
And, you know,
individual decisions.
Yeah. This is really
intense. And career choices and, you know, the big stuff. I mean, what's the biggest decision you ever made?
Oh man. The decision to go back to school.
Yeah.
To go back to university.
Yeah.
Because I had went for a year and then I stopped because I was just in general sciences. I didn't really know what I was doing. Nothing really got my passion going. So I quit and I went off and worked for a while. The decision to go back to school was a big one.
It's a big decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like deciding to take on $25,000 in debt.
I know, right? Yeah.
Anyway.
But it's true. So it used to be first your big decision was where you're going to go away to school, right? I always felt that was a pretty big decision, was where would I go to school?
Yeah.
And then I don't know, after that, I think that was the toughest decision I ever
had to where make. To go.
Where to go. Hmm. So let's talk about your brain making a decision.
Okay.
Okay, so I've read, I don't know, you know, that it's, when you make a decision, you use almost all of your brain.
Wow.
Right? Whereas in other cases, you only use parts of your brain. Mm-hmm. And you're consciously making decisions, but your subconscious is also working. And it works like about 3 bazillion times faster than your, right?
Yeah,
your conscious mind. So, that's why I think it's important, you know, people talk about the 24-hour rule. Just wait for 24 hours.
Oh.
And I think that gives your whole brain time to go, okay, I've run the scenarios and here's how I would deal with it. Have you ever noticed that? Like sometimes you make a decision right on the spot you wake up the next morning and think, oh, I should not have made that decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I've also read that when you have decided to work on a problem and you say, okay, that's it, I'll throw it to the back of my head.
Yeah.
Then and you go on to other things, the back of your brain is still working on it.
Totally.
So
that's
that would be why you want to make those 24-hour wait times.
And that's why in the middle of the night, you'll remember that name of that place you went to that time.
Yeah.
You know, because your brain's working on it.
Yeah.
You just don't know that your brain's working on
right.
it. Right. And then there's another thing that happens in decision making is we can only make so many decisions at a time or in a day, right?
Oh.
Like so we 12? Have kind of a bandwidth. Oh, I'm not sure. Like, and maybe that's why it's like, what will we make for dinner? Because you're so decisioned
out. We are done decision making. Right? And so now we can't even decide, okay, let's order pizza.
Right? And so sometimes I'll go home and I'll say to the boys, I don't want to make any more decisions today. I feel like most days I'm a game show contestant and people will say, Louise, what about this? Bing! Okay, Louise, what about that? Bing! You know, like it's, you just get tired.
Yeah.
And apparently for world leaders, Obama in particular, he has a lot of decisions made for him.
Yes.
In order to protect him from decision fatigue.
Oh my gosh. I want him protected from decision fatigue.
So he doesn't pick what he's going to wear. He doesn't pick what he's going to eat.
Somebody makes that decision.
All of those decisions are made for him so that he can focus on the really big stuff.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is very cool.
Yeah.
I want somebody to make those decisions for me.
Yes. Would you? I don't know if I would like that. I'm kind of a stubborn.
I'd love it if somebody just dressed me and fed me in the
really?
Morning. Yes. I don't want to make those decisions.
Yeah. I guess I'll never be an Obama because I really like to pick what I wear. Eat my breakfast or not eat my breakfast.
Well, you
more
would
often
have
than
to
not,
choose.
I just don't
that's
eat
all.
My breakfast.
Oh, well, see, you're not deciding something positive there
by
not eating. Anyway, you would be one of those people then that would have to decide which decisions are important to you to make. And you would reserve those ones for, you know, for the big stuff and a couple of minor things.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff would be somebody else's. Maybe deciding if you're going to drive or ride your bike that day.
Yes.
That could be something someone else could decide.
Yes. I guess it could be, couldn't it? Well, I know. And so, you know, that's part of the qualities of leadership is being prepared to say, I don't need to make that decision.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not about getting to make all the decisions. It's about knowing what decisions need to be made and what your input's going to be.
Right.
Right.
And that happens in any group, actually.
Yes.
The leader should not ever think that they are the ones who need to know everything in order to make the correct decision. Mm-hmm. That's why you have a team.
Yes. Yeah. And whether it's your family, you know, in my house, Dave's pretty easygoing. I'm more of a fusser and fuss and overthink things. And he's like, yeah, sounds good to me. He's super easygoing. And thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough room in one house for two fussy decision makers.
Yeah.
And my teenager can't decide anything right now.
Well, their brains aren't ready for that yet.
They're not ready for
they're
that
still in their
decision making piece. Yeah.
What is that? The prefrontal cortex development stage, right? Mm-hmm. It's all they can do to not fall asleep during the day.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Yeah.
Just let them be, right?
Yeah. At least when they're sleeping, they're not making bad decisions. Not that he's making any bad decisions.
I know.
But you know what I mean?
Well, but this is the time where they do it. This is why they're kind of in a risky time,
yeah,
right?
So you ask them, what are you doing? I don't know. What did I have at school today? Nothing. Like maybe nothing did happen.
Do you want to do something tonight? No.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Nah. Yep, nah.
It's like you're in my house, man.
Yes. Or you're in my house. Anyway. But so it deciding what to decide is also a decision.
It's true.
Right?
It's quite complex.
Yeah. And so I do wrestle with stuff. Sometimes I think, no, I get to decide. No, actually, I don't get to decide.
Yeah.
Or I could decide, but I'm not going to because it would be better for someone else to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
But you know, there are people who are better at decision making.
I think so.
And so you learn to trust them.
Yes.
Right? You learn to just say, well, Louise will make that decision. Yeah. Let Louise decide. Because it's just, you know, sometimes we're just, you know, that's one of our skills.
Yes.
One of our facets that make us effective. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And also some people use their intuition more effectively.
More, yeah.
That can't always be perfect, right?
No,
like your intuition isn't correct all the time because intuition really is just an amassing of your personal experiences. It's not actually connecting with a power source.
No, it's like sort of going, let's go back to the videotape here and see what happened last time. Yeah, it is.
It is. That's what your intuition is. Yeah. And so sometimes there's a problem, like there's actually a term for it, I think, when you have a, when you get into decision traps.
Okay.
And you like chronically make bad decisions when you're confronted with a certain sort of selection of facts. Oh,
because you haven't learned the lesson.
That's right. Yeah. And you and that's your experience, right? Yeah. That every time this happens, I make this decision. And so you keep going and you're in a decision trap.
Repeating the same mistake over and over again.
Right. And so if there's nothing to challenge you to get out of the decision trap, you don't necessarily perceive that there's a wrong way of doing it.
Because you've always done it that way.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a cognitive thing that we have to sort of struggle with. But and so your intuition sometimes leads you down that path is what I'm saying. But mostly our personal experiences, our rule of thumb, you know, what our families have taught us, that's usually what feeds the intuitive decision.
And it's important to let it just think about it. Like I'll say, okay, let's think about it and we'll decide tomorrow.
Yeah.
You just live with a decision for a bit.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow it'll make more sense.
Yeah, and sometimes, like, this is the other thing with teenagers. Like, they want a decision from you right now. Can I go and do this thing this weekend with my friend? We're going to go to Vernon and do this thing. And sometimes I'll say, you know what? I just need to think about that.
Yes.
I can't say yes or no right now. And if you want a decision right now, the answer is no.
Yes. Good one. If you'd like a decision now.
Yeah.
A decision now, please press no. I'm going to try that.
Because I need time to think about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I need to think about it. I do say that a lot to my kids.
And the fast decision isn't necessarily the right decision.
No. And except, you know, if you're driving and there's an oncoming car, that a fast decision is a good thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's
so we have two kinds of two abilities. And so the best decisions are usually combinations of, right? So you're sharp enough to make the fast decisions when you need it, but you're thoughtful enough, you know, to have put your seatbelt on and drive with both hands on the wheels and, you know, all that.
So a series of good decisions and instead of a single decision that has made, you know, like whatever happened or not happened.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, when they talk about structures of decision making, like in the big, you know, like in the space shuttle disaster.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't one person's bad decision.
I know. And aren't we so, we so want to know. Who screwed it up?
I know. And we're funny that way, right? We just need to pinpoint it.
Sometimes it's a culture of...
Yeah. It's the structure of how decisions were made in that process. And there's multiple things. It was a cascade effect, right?
Yes.
Multiple things that happened that ended up in that horrific disaster. So that's why organizations, I mean, that's kind of thing that people learn from.
Yeah.
That organizations have said, okay, now we have to look at our structured decision making. That's when leaders are told, okay, you know, shut up, sit down, listen to your team.
Mm-hmm.
Because your team, if you're not using all of your expertise, then you are not actually informing yourself to make a good decision.
Yeah.
So even leaders who make good decisions need to, you know, include a lot of people.
Still need to get the input.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can't know everything.
No. Oh, that would hurt to know all that stuff, wouldn't it? Your brain would just...
Yeah. And the flip side of that...
Nobody knows everything. And if someone says they do, you should really...
Run.
Follow your instinct. Turn the other way.
Yeah. But the flip side of the group, like the being able to utilize your whole team, is getting stuck in the group think. Have you heard about that?
Oh, the group think. No, group but think. I'm sure I've been stuck in it.
Well, it's a term I think psychologists invented a few years back. But it's the tendency for groups to experience powerful pressures to conform, right? Like if you're in a group and somebody has a dissenting view and like the 90 other people in the group are in the, you know, affirmative, that person is not going to say or not feeling comfortable enough to say, I don't agree.
Yes.
That's not happening. And so they go like, yeah, I agree. That sounds like a good idea to me. So groupthink will pressure people to think a certain way. And they even sometimes will, like if you evaluate it afterwards, they'll think, that's really how I feel.
Yeah.
Because just the pressure to conform is so great.
Well, like juries and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily know why, right? That you feel that way. You don't know why you feel the dissenting view, the opposite view. And if you've got nothing to back it up, you got no facts and figures to back it up, then you tend to start disbelieving in yourself and believe, well, those guys must be right. Because this entire group is saying one thing.
Yeah.
I'm the only one saying the other. So they must be right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's groupthink. And that's a trap that you don't want to get into.
Yeah. I think it'd be hard to be a juror. in a court case.
Well, it would
be a tough decision.
Absolutely, because your judgment is absolutely clouded. You cannot make a clear evaluation when you're under those kinds of influences. Mm-hmm. So,
Wow. Well, and sometimes you're in professions where it's not your job to think. It's just your job to do.
Yeah, which is challenging too, right? Because when you don't have the control, just, this is where it kind of comes
back. You fulfill your duties.
Yeah.
You know, in the military, that's part of the, you know, they train you to feel like you have to fulfill orders.
Well, doesn't that feel a bit like groupthink?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like that you're doing it because this is right.
Because you've been taught. Because you were told to do it.
Yeah.
And you were trained to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but no, you don't get to evaluate each thing that you're doing. No, that's not your decision.
No, and the system wouldn't work if they did this. So if you're going to be in that line of work.
Yeah.
Right? But it depends on the profession. Like if you're a pilot or an air traffic controller, or, you know, those decisions are pretty critical, or a surgeon or a, right?
Yeah.
So you have to go through the same steps every single time. Even if you've done it a million times.
Yeah.
You still have to go through the checklist. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It just depends on the profession. Astronauts too.
But you still get to react to things that are different though, right?
Yes.
Whereas some people are, they just don't get the power to do that.
Well, and you're trained to react but ultimately you're trained so that you do everything the same time every time so you don't, or the same way every time so that you don't have to react.
Right.
Right. Very few pilots ever crash land an airplane.
Yeah.
Right. Because of how they're trained.
Right.
It's really, I find that stuff fascinating.
Trained decision making.
Yes. Oof. Is that not what we do all day, every day? Make decisions.
Yeah. Well, it's there's three different levels, right? We have the individual and the group and the organizational decision making. And so there's a lot of different processes involved here that are good or not good.
We make professional decisions. Mm-hmm. We make personal decisions.
Yeah.
We make decisions on our own behalf and on behalf of
other people.
Others. And so that's where, like, the group decision making is probably one of the most critical. Right?
It is. And actually, when you think about it, I mean, how many groups are you under the influence of all the time, right? Like, you're on council now. Mm-hmm. That's a group decision-making process.
Yes.
Bigger yet because of the staff of the city. You've got your own company. You've got a couple of organizations you're a big part of. I mean, there's lots of groups that have to come together. And team decision-making is not easy.
It's not easy. Well, you try getting 8 people to agree on one pizza.
Yeah.
I want anchovies. I don't want anchovies.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It definitely is an art.
It is. And so
a process.
You have to put in a structure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds very, you know, paperwork and stuff, but really you have to put a structure in place in order to be able to make good decisions. It's like a culture of decision making.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you can do that effectively, then you can build a good team and you can build synergy in your group. And that's any group. That's a family group. That's a nonprofit or a business. You just need to be able to utilize your entire team and make good decisions based on the team's
and healthy relationships. Even if there's differing opinions, you can still have a healthy relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so just for fun,
there is a
system that this fellow developed.
Ooh. It's not Robert's Rules of Order?
It's not Robert's Rules, but that's important to recognize too, because that is a structure of decision making.
No, it's the structure.
Yeah.
I mean, a parliament uses it.
Right. Well, it's what every nonprofit is supposed to use, right? Mm-hmm. Businesses are developing their own structures. Like Google, you should see on Google their 10 decision-making rules or whatever. I mean, it's very interesting because, of course, you know, they're a whole different kind of organization than most. But anyway, the point is, though, is that each group, depending on the nature of your group, needs to design. Here's the art and design part.
Yes.
You need to design your decision-making process. And it is going to be different.
Yes.
It has to be catered to your needs. And it also has to be thoughtful of the group dynamic part that shows, okay, how many people is too many people to make a decision?
Mm-hmm.
So drilling down information and being able to make a decision is often done in smaller groups. Mm-hmm. Like you can't have a group of 30 people trying to make a decision. Typically it's 7. 7 is a magic number. 7 or under.
7 or under.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there
and so
you go.
Even a board of 10 people will have a bit of trouble.
Well,
and has to have a structure in place to help the process.
Subcommittees too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why subcommittees actually are pretty effective, and they make their decision, bring it back to a board, a larger board, and the board says,
with recommendations. Okay, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, but I thought just this was fun. So what's the name? Edward de Bono.
Edward de Bono.
Has developed this system called.
I love this system.
Yeah. Six thinking hats. I love it.
It's great.
I'm actually pretty excited. So there would be six people in this group.
Yes.
And it's an analysis tool. And really every decision-making process is an analysis, mm-hmm. right? You analyze the information and what decision actually has to be made and then the possible outcomes and all that stuff. Anyway, okay. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. There's a person. Okay, you actually have to have colored hats for this process. Like you genuinely.
Actual colored hats?
You do. You wow. have to have hats. So you might have to. Go out to your local thrift store and dig out some funny hats. So there's got to be a white hat. The white hat is the information hat. So this person has the facts, the figures, and the information needs and gaps.
So that's the role they play in the decision.
In this okay. decision. So this would be a group, and they're getting together to deal with a proposal, a problem, a situation, an issue, and they're trying to come up with a decision yes. together as a group. So you have these different hats. So the white hat is the facts person. Then yes. you have a red hat.
Yes.
They represent emotions. So this covers all the intuitive feelings, the emotions of this decision. And they have to, people have to say, this red hat person will ask everyone, how do you feel about
how
this?
How does this make you feel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody does
too.
Have to say how they feel about it. And that can be some of the hidden reasons why people might either agree or disagree with the situation, right? They don't often will.
I don't feel right about it.
Yeah.
That's and my gut is telling me. And you have to listen to your gut.
You do. Yeah.
It and you have to you figure it out. From, tigers.
From saber-toothed tigers. Yeah. That's right. That's what it's there for.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we have the yellow hat. This is the hat of optimism.
Oh, okay. So one person's job is to
it's kind of the yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the logically positive. So why it will work and what could be the great benefits that it'll offer. And everyone gets to say that. So the yellow hat will actually be able to ask people, what's the best thing that you think can happen mm-hmm. here? And so everybody gets a chance to say what they think is the best thing that can happen. So that's the yellow hat person. The black hat, guess what the black hat person is?
I don't know. Negative?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor
bummer
black.
Dude. Yeah.
I like black, but it's too bad. Black is the pessimism hat.
Yes.
So this is the hat of judgment and caution. This person's job is to say, yeah, but this could happen.
Yes. And they're not always welcome at the table.
That's
black
true.
Hats. And yet it's so important to say, hold on a minute. Yeah. What if this happens?
Yeah. It is an important thing to think about. You can't always stay positive 100%. This is going to be great.
And you have to have the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing that could happen?
And how do we deal with it if that happened?
Yes.
Because if you know how you'll deal with it, then you've got a plan. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's often helpful to have a black hat.
Not
person.
Saying these things does not make the decision better. You have to say.
You do.
I like
the what's the worst that can happen, because sometimes it's just little problems. And somebody comes to you and says, oh, I don't think I can do this because, it just, I don't know, it's just going to all go wrong. And so I say, well, what is the worst thing that can happen? Well, okay, it's this. And how will
it's
you deal
gonna
with it?
It's going to cost an extra $100. Okay, let's just do
it. Well, then the
it.
Risk yeah. is okay it's then, okay. right? It's a benefit risk kind of thing.
Risk versus reward.
Yes. And if the worst thing that can happen only costs you some dollars mm-hmm. or costs you 1 minute of embarrassment, maybe the risk is worth it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But you have to ask it.
You do.
Yes.
Okay.
So I like the black hat people.
Yeah, black hat is important, like, people.
Yeah.
And now you got a green hat. The green hat
Ooh,
is...
green hats.
I know. The green hat is the person of growth and possibilities. It's the hat of creativity, alternatives, mm-hmm. innovation.
Possibility.
Yeah, what's yes. possible and what can change? Like, what is an alternative to this thing, the way that we're doing it now, that would change the way we do things?
Okay.
So it's kind of it is the innovative hat.
Like the plan B hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so somebody with a bit more creativity mm-hmm. needs to be at the table, right? Like people who think things differently, like you. Oh, that's why you're so valuable having on different groups and organizations. Because you need
nice
somebody
you
that thinks laterally rather than linearly. And that's the green hat. All the possibilities.
I'm just infinitely curious. That's all.
Do you know what was the biggest?
I'm like curious George.
You're curious Louise.
Yeah.
The biggest impact you had on the Arts Council is way back when the Arts Council and the Art Gallery were still two separate organizations, and there was all this different fuss and muss about gaming money and all this. Okay, and you said, all right, in a perfect world, what would this look like?
Yeah.
And my immediate reaction was, well, a single organization together, more efficient, you know, with a single purpose mandate to make this art center the best place it can be, mm-hmm. to serve the needs of the entire community.
Mm-hmm. And boom, and there
you
it was.
Said, well, and you said, well, then let's do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just that simple. In a perfect world, well, what go. Would this look like? And I have used that since then. Mm-hmm. You have to have somebody who thinks outside like
of the blue sky. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And that change mm-hmm. might be the thing you need mm-hmm. to do.
Well, I know when I make decisions, I often think in 5 years, in 10 years, and will this matter?
Yeah.
Tomorrow, will this matter?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, I usually say, well, forget about it.
Yeah.
Right? But if in 5 years, will the outcome be better? All right, then let's do it.
Yeah. So yeah. You're a green hat.
I think I'm a green hat.
You're pretty, well, you're a lot of hats, but you're definitely the greenest.
I'm hat. Sometimes red though too, because I'll have like my gut will say, I don't feel good about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but the red hat person will ask everyone how they feel okay. about it. So you'll still get your chance.
Oh, I'll still get my chance? Yeah. Okay. All right. Then I want to be the green.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I really prefer red for a hat.
You look better in red?
Okay. I would look better in a red hat.
All right. Right. And then there's the blue hat. This is the sixth hat. The blue hat is the process hat.
So they're very important to me.
Well, yes, because this person actually oversees the whole process mm-hmm. and doesn't necessarily get involved with the actual decision making, but keeps the decision making process moving.
Right.
Right.
So I don't get to decide. I just get to make sure everybody follows the process.
Right. Follows the subject. Yes. Make sure that we don't get off track on a tangent talking about the cheesies or something yes. else. Right. So what is working in the process? Yes. What is working well? What is not working? And this blue hat person says, okay, you know what? This part over here isn't working. We need to focus yes. back on this. So their job isn't necessarily to focus on the topic.
Right.
Just on the process.
On the process.
Yeah. So
and important.
Which
sometimes
is
I think
clearly,
we need a blue hat in the studio. Maybe.
Sometimes Eric is our blue hat.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he keeps us on time anyway.
Exactly.
But essentially the blue hat's the effectiveness person, making sure that you're being effective mm-hmm. as a team. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's your six
so
hats.
So that would be like the speaker. Of
yeah.
The
chair.
Comments.
The chair. Oh yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Because. Yeah. The speaker doesn't really get to comment or weigh in on the topic.
That's right.
Just point of order or recognizing people or yeah that's yeah. important.
It is. Mm-hmm. Well, otherwise we would just sit around having coffee all
I know
day,
it feels really formal. Like I know at council, for example, you address the chair.
Yeah.
So you can't come to council and say, hey, Louise, how's it going? I have to say your worship through you yeah. to Councillor Wallace Richmond. You know, like it's,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't mind if it was just like, we call everybody by their first names.
Yeah.
But in all correspondence and all matters at council meetings and development meetings, it's, you know, full name.
Structure.
Yeah.
It's all about the structure.
That's right.
And that keeps it clean. Keeps you focused on what really matters.
It does keep it clean.
Yeah.
I sort of crave a little bit of informality. That's what we giggle sometimes, but it's very formal process.
Are you allowed to giggle?
Yes, we are. Giggling is allowed. Encouraged. In fact.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a bit of a, it's a bit difficult to get used to that mm-hmm. process.
But
when
some,
you're me yeah, on the outside trying to give a presentation to council to sort of, because not having the little course, you know, there should be a little course outside council chambers
yes.
that tells people, okay, you know what? When you go in there, you have to address the mayor and you have to call her your worship. You don't say, hey, Nancy.
Hey, Nancy.
Because in Salmon Arm, we all know almost everybody.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, like say Ken Jameson, for instance, like everybody of a certain age would just call him, hey, Mr. J. And so you have to be taught how to do the formalities.
That's a good point. There should be a little course yeah. how to go to council.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so
and
we
don't
just,
bring muffins.
And don't bring muffins. Oh, there's usually some food around somewhere, a yeah. lot of food. We were just talking about how many meetings we go to. You go to a lot of meetings. You know, yeah. we go to hundreds of meetings a year.
Yeah.
Several hundred.
Yes.
Maybe as many as 1,000.
Maybe. It's kind of frightening to imagine.
That is a bit
yes.
scary when I think about it.
Yeah.
And every single group is different. Mm-hmm. Even for all the Robert's Rules of Order and agendas, and it's unbelievable how different it is.
Yeah.
I have yet to go to 2 AGMs that have been run the same way.
Yeah. I know. It's kind of funny because.
And you think, wait, I thought we those were all singing from the same
I know.
Song
those
sheet.
Are legal structures that are in place through yes. BC Societies yes. Act, and yet. Yeah, every nonprofit runs it a different way.
Yeah, like some boards, the whole board resigns and they reelect every year. Mm. That's crazy.
That is crazy talk.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very uncertain.
No consistency.
Yeah. But usually they reelect the same people. But, I know, but that's part of the step is they dissolve the board and then reassemble. And I just, that's so, I couldn't handle that uncertainty.
Yeah. But. Well, and how do you get wonderful group synergy when you're at risk of every year, everybody went flying the coop?
I don't know.
You see, that's another thing, right? The commitment level kind of adds to the synergy and helps with decision making because nobody's just thinking past the end of their nose.
No.
They're thinking into the 5-year, 10-year plan too. Mm-hmm. So decision making has to be kind of a commitment.
Yes.
And if you don't feel the commitment, maybe you don't make good decisions.
You can't just join a board for something to do. You have to commit to making the tough decisions.
Right. Which is challenging.
Yes.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, as if the election in Alberta was not dramatic enough.
I know.
Yeah, that could have been our dramatic moment.
It could have been.
Yes.
Yes.
But we do try to pick a moment in the art world.
Well, yeah. So now we're taking you to the Middle East. We're going to Tehran.
Wow.
And where I guess the culture, it's notoriously full of pictures of leaders.
Yeah.
Right. So there'd be like, if it were here, it'd be giant pictures of Justin Trudeau or Stephen Harper, you know, on big billboards up and down the highways and through the cities. Can you imagine?
I could not imagine.
Well, but that's part of that culture. Well, the mayor of Tehran has decided that he's had enough of that.
Mm.
So now he's replaced all those billboards with classic pieces of art.
Isn't that amazing?
It's beautiful. So now it went
from... We're talking like 1,500 billboards.
Yes.
Right? Like that's a lot. 1,500.
He's a former Revolutionary Guard commander, a retired pilot, and he's lost 2 presidential bids. Let's see. This week he added one more title, Patron of the Arts, as he directed all the city's 1,500 billboards fitted out with copies of famous works of art, including Western works of art.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was quite amazing because he's got a lot of Iranian artists, which is fantastic, but also like Rembrandt still lifes and Jackson Pollock and
how
Warhol.
Brave, because it's also, in addition to being like government propaganda, it's ad space owned by the city.
Yeah.
And it was a source of income.
Right.
Well, that's gone away.
Yeah.
So I just think it's fantastic. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, and one of the quotes from a taxi driver was that it generates these fantastic conversations in his cab every day.
Wow.
Because they drive by these big works of art and people talk about it. Oh, yes. Yeah. You know, I saw that at the Louvre.
Oh.
Or I was, you know, that's always inspired me. I see pictures of that. It makes me happy.
It's true. A billboard in Tehran with a copy of Munch's The Scream. The city mayor is backing a project to decorate walls, parks, and other public spaces with famous artworks, many of them Western. And it's true that...
And they'd be big.
Big.
Yeah, they're not just like little ad spaces like at bus stops. We're talking like the billboards like that we see, right?
But think about, so downtown Vancouver and all those billboards would be...
Yeah. I'm just thinking on the way down to Enderby, the log barn billboards would be a lot better if it was real art on there rather than...
I mean, I don't know. My first thought was, oh, what a nightmare for the Brights, but... Ooh, he's the mayor of Tehran. He pretty much does what he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the rights?
The rights to show.
Do you think that would be...
I don't know.
You know, in this weird little social media world we live in where people just share images and we don't talk about copyright anymore?
Maybe not. But it could change a generation of people.
Yeah. Imagine what that could do here.
Imagine if Times Square was just art.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I feel more relaxed just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we sort of rid ourselves of all this.
Of the advertising.
Noise. Yeah. Noise.
Yeah. And just time to reflect, because it is what art does for you is kind of set every time of human existence in its place, tells a story of our timeline. And so you would reflect on those timelines, reflect on historical changes and events and people and really be able to say, that was really important for this country to have
this. You think about, like when Picasso painted that painting
Guernica.
Guernica. That's true. I was thinking the one that sold at auction this week for $169 million. He painted it to remember his friend Ahimetsis.
Right.
So it had the story.
Yeah.
So it's,
gosh,
$169 million.
Okay, so
story.
Yeah, you know, this still that bugs me. Does like, it bug okay, you? That's a lot of money. I get it that big governments spend a lot of money on big things that we never see, but think in a small community what that would mean.
Yes,
what $169 million mean to Salmon Arm?
Well, it would be five time. It would be 5 years of revenue,
annual budget.
Yeah,
annual operating revenue. Yeah. Holy, I understand that art of a certain message mm-hmm. has value, and I respect it because I'm part of the sector. I just think that amount of money is obscene.
Well, it's obscene.
It's terrible.
Well, but, and I think it's because it's scarcity. There's only one.
There's only one. And we are very obsessed with scarcity now.
Yeah, we love scarcity.
Yeah. Don't necessarily want it if everybody's got it, right? Like, that's why Tommy Hilfiger brand has gone down. Did you know that?
Yeah, because everybody's got it.
Because, it got too popular.
Yeah.
Now nobody wants it.
No, I know.
Jeez. We are a funny species.
It's true. Yeah. And you watch the, like, Gloria Vanderbilt used to be, like, the high-end brand. Now you can buy it at Zellers or Target, so
yeah,
it kind of lost its but that's brand equity. That's maybe that'll be next week's topic.
You keep coming up with it in the last 5 minutes of every show.
It's a dramatic moment. They took a risk, and so it might have seemed like it happened overnight, but it probably took 5 years to do it.
Five years of planning for a small project is nothing. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I know. That's the Mosaic project took 5 years to plan, fundraise, design, inventory, everything, right?
And some people say, one day I drove by and there it was, a brand new Mosaic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we understand process and decision making happened for a long time before the actual product arrived.
My heart would sing if all those billboards were just works of art.
It would be so great.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what public art in a community does, right? It's like little billboards. And you just walk around town and you see things that strike up conversations, make children ask questions, make you think something differently. And maybe it appears different to you every single day that you see it. Mm-hmm. And all it needs to do is trigger some new neural pathway in your brain.
Yeah.
And it's done its job.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we will have new public art soon.
Well,
there's one's leaving and one's...
Yes, we're having an August turnover.
Oh, August. Okay.
Yeah, for the temporary public art. That's a yearly thing. It happens about mid-August every year now. John Sayer's Coyote Tricks has been on since last August. And so when we get to this August, it'll be a Sharda Murray Keegan and Eric Kutchker collaborative piece. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we're also having culture.
Yeah, Culture Crawl in August, too. And actually, we're in the planning stages of that now. So if any artists out there want to be part of the Culture Crawl and any businesses in the downtown who want to be on the Culture Crawl walk, they are to contact the Arts Council office, because we partner businesses with artists. And we had about 30, 32 businesses over the last couple of years doing it. And we partner the artist and the business to show one artist, one business. Mm-hmm. We make a lovely brochure. People walk around with their brochure, do their own walking tour, to highlight all the different artists.
Yes, we can visit the art in the business.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you're walking into the businesses. And I have people, it's kind of amazing, because I don't know if I just tend not to do these things, but it seems to me you go to five or six.
Planning them to be able to actually do them.
Yeah. And for me, they're accidental, right? You walk into a store and, so-and-so is showing here. But there are people that come to the gallery, pick up a brochure, and there's, three or four people, and they say, yep, today we're doing the walk. We're doing the Culture Crawl. And that's what they do for the whole afternoon.
Wow.
I know. And then when they go into a cafe, we'll have coffee here. They go into the candy bowl. We'll have a candy. they actually do support the businesses too. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a win-win.
Genius. Yeah. So there's so much for visitors to do this summer.
Well, there really is.
It's a big, big summer.
It really...
You just need the weather to cooperate.
Yeah, except I'm really hoping for some rainy weather. But not on Wednesdays, because Wednesdays on the Wharf will start June 10th.
June 10th.
Yeah. First one of the year is the school bands.
Yes.
So we've got the Jackson Band from SAS... the Jazz Band from SAS Jackson. Mm-hmm. And then we also have the Jazz Band from the middle school performing this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think my kid's in that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. My kids will both miss it because my kid was in the jazz band last year in grade 8, but in grade 9 now she's not, so she's not getting it. And then my other kid's in the concert band, but not the jazz band.
Oh, the jazz band. Okay, okay.
Yeah, no, that's different.
Probably not the jazz band. Okay, yeah. All right.
Anyway, it'll be fun. It's always fun. Yes. Like, because they're pretty ripping good musicians, yeah. Right? Like, and they're just, I don't know. It's just really great.
It's such a big deal for them, too.
Well, yeah.
To perform.
It is. Yeah. It's a big audience, right? Like, well, the Marine Park can hold 1,500 people, right? So potentially, if it's a nice night, it can be a biggest audience ever kind of situation. So,
lovely. Yeah. So that's June 10th. And then random acts of music.
Well, the random acts of music starts in July when the kids are out of school. And that is a Selmar Community Association sponsored program that we do where we hire youth musicians mm-hmm. to play in the downtown on Wednesday afternoons, and they play in, like, they're either solo or duo musicians, and they just go around and play for people
just randomly.
Yeah They wander with their bright orange shirts, and then all of a sudden they just start wailing on their saxophone,
yes,
or the guitar or the trumpet or the harmonica.
Wow, it's so good for their confidence too.
It is. It's funny because some of them, like, their first time, they'll come and they'll be like all nervous mm-hmm. and scared, and then they go out and they come back 2 hours later. They're like, "Oh yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, piece of cake. I got this." Right? Yeah, but that's how they. I mean, we're helping them make decisions.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. So we have a big, heavy youth component to this. So we have right now. It's the Because Art.
Yeah.
Hashtag Because Art.
So you can search that on Twitter too. Because what we're trying to do is there's 212 pieces in mm-hmm. this exhibition. It's on until May 30th. You got some time to get in there and see it. But wow, like over 75 artists represented here. And we've got these little chalkboards in the pillars where people can write, we're calling it old school tweets.
Yes.
Where people can write their comments.
Old fashioned tweets. That's funny.
About the exhibition, about what inspires them, about what their favorite piece is.
Yes.
We're taking a picture of one of those boards every day and tweeting it with the hashtag Because Art. Mm-hmm. So you can actually see what people think of the exhibition.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yes, very fun. So there's that. And then there's, we're busy planning for a youth
for
camp.
Oh yes, exciting. The youth camps. Oh, the big so exciting. So we've got actually several things going on. The animation camp.
Yes.
Because we have Nikki Weber at the gallery now. She has her BFA in animation.
Yes.
From Emily Carr. So we're Animator. Using her.
Yes.
You're utilizing her. Not utilizing her. She's offering the art camp July 20th to 24th. It's for kids 11 to 15. It's all about stop motion animation. And it starts from character design right through storyboard, set building, you know, and then the actual filmmaking. So it's like a really intensive week. It's $200, which is actually a screaming good deal when you think about it. And then the finale,
is a
mini film festival. At the Selmar Classic on Friday afternoon.
Fantastic.
I know.
Oh, that thing's going to fill
up. Everybody can come. Like, you can just come. It'll just be by donation. Yeah.
So if listeners have kids in this age group who are very into art, this is the week to do it. Because I don't think it's going to, I think it's going to fill up.
I think it'll fill up fast.
This could be the beginning of something really big.
Yeah, we only have 8 spots.
Oh my goodness.
And we've already got 2 that emailed yesterday. I saw it on the website and penciled themselves in. So basically,
get your kid in, you can come to the festival.
That's right. And then also in August, we are going to have these teen art boot camps.
Wow.
Yeah, there's going to be 4 dates. They're just full day workshops. You can get information like that about that on the website. So if you want to get more information on all the programmings coming up and all of other arts groups that are offering things this spring and summer, check the website www.samnarmartcenter.ca.
That's right.
Fantastic. Well, it's been a lovely decision-making day, ladies.
Hasn't it? Let's go out there and make some decisions.
That's so inspiring.
Or not make some decisions.
Maybe we have decision fatigue and we're done for the day.
I do. I think my brain is empty now.
It's only 9 o'clock.
I'm all out of decisions. Anyway, have a good week.
You too.